Good morning. I'm Bruce McGregor with
Chris McGregor.
And today, back with us, Mike Aquilina, editor of New Covenant Magazine, co-author or editor of several of our Sunday visitor books, including What Catholic Believes, a pocket catechism, and Weapons of the Spirit, the selected writings of Father John Hugo, who was the spiritual director of Dorothy Day. And we're delighted to have Mike with us again, talking about church fathers, the fathers of the church. Really a basic introduction to all of us for the first Christian teachers. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the program. Delighted to have you back.
Good morning, Bruce. Good morning, Chris. It's always great to be here.
Especially on this feast of St. Justin Martyr.
What a great guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And why don't you tell us about him? Because, growing up, once again, here's somebody I did not know.
Well, St. Justin, when we speak of St. Justin, we're talking about one of the very early authors and martyrs of the church. He's writing right smack in the middle of the 100s, right around 150 A.D.,
mm-hmm.
And he wrote a lot. Quite a bit of what he wrote survives for us to read today. And as a matter of fact, a lot of it's in the Catechism of the Catholic Church and in some pretty prominent places. St. Justin was born in what's today the city of Nablus in Palestine on the West Bank.
Mm-hmm.
At that time it was Neapolis. It's the same place as Shechem in the Old Testament, and he was he probably came from Greek lineage. He was a pagan,
mm-hmm.
And when he was a young man, he was a real seeker after truth, and he tried a lot of different ways. He wanted to know what was true, so he went looking after philosophers. And first, he was with the Stoics. He was with a Stoic philosopher who taught him a lot, and we can see that the Stoics remained with him. You know, a lot of their ideas remained with him throughout his life, even after he became a Christian.
Right.
But the Stoics really weren't concerned about God, and this philosopher couldn't teach him anything about God, this ultimate truth. And so he left the Stoics, and he tried to find truth with the Aristotelians, but this follower of Aristotle wouldn't proceed unless Justin gave him money up front.
Oh, no. Well, that will be a deal killer sometimes.
and he thought that this was unbecoming of a philosopher, so he abandoned Aristotle, and he moved on to a Pythagorean, who were kind of mystics.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pythagorean told him, "Before I'll begin to teach you, I expect you to learn everything about music, astronomy, and geometry." And Justin just wanted to get on with it.
Yeah. Right.
He wasn't going to do the prereqs for that course. He found Platonists, followers of Plato, and they promised him that they would lead him to God. And they took him pretty far along the path. Justin found a certain measure of peace among the Platonists, but he was still restless, and he still wanted to know God, not just know about God. One day he was walking along the beach, and he encountered this man rather suddenly, an old man, a mysterious man, who began to speak with him about his restlessness and introduced him to the prophets of Israel. Eventually, this man led him to read the prophets and to find in the prophets a foreshadowing of the life of Jesus Christ, the Messiah. And it was in Jesus that Justin would ultimately find peace. So Justin converted to Christianity, probably at Ephesus. He continued to practice as a philosopher, and he wore the traditional mantle of a pagan philosopher, and he just took to wandering from town to town, teaching philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, he ended up in Rome, where he established himself a school. He taught there until he agitated some of the local pagan philosophers, and they agitated the emperor against him. Actually, they agitated the mayor of Rome against him, and Justin died as a martyr. So that's a capsule of his life. There's an awful lot in between there, but Justin's known down to our own day as a great apologist for the faith. He explained and defended the faith to an audience that was hostile, that believed a lot of lies about the faith, and he set the record straight.
He really established with his apologies, wasn't there at least two really famous ones?
One to the Senate and one to the Emperor Antoninus Pius.
Right, and through that, a true apologist is someone who helps point us, not just giving proof texts,
mm-hmm.
but someone who helps us, in his case, through philosophy, to see the greater truths of God.
Yes, yes, and he wanted to do that. He was dealing with, as I said, some misconceptions about Christian faith, and some of them were rumors that he himself had believed, that Christians were immoral, that they were murderers, that they practiced human sacrifice, that practiced orgies and that sort of thing. He was arguing against these, just saying that they're not true. And in order to refute them, he describes what happens at a baptism, mm-hmm. and he describes what happens in the Mass. And he described these two rituals, the two main rituals of the Christian Church, in very great detail. So the detail's so great that his descriptions are just picked up and used verbatim today in the mm-hmm. Catechism of the Catholic Church to describe our Mass today. That's how much we are united with the Church of 150 A.D.
The life of St. Justin Martyr just really demonstrates what you have said all along, Mike, that we really need to know the lives of these important figures of our faith to know that this is a tradition that has been passed down. Well, not something invented in with a creed in 300, but a lived out faith that touched the lives of so many.
Yes, we find it all in Justin's plentiful writings. The two main surviving documents we have are his two apologies, which you mentioned. Another one is his dialogue with Trypho, who was a rabbi, a very famous rabbi of that time, and Justin is arguing with him from the Old Testament to prove the divinity of Christ, which, of course, you know, if you believe some people who are writing today, they say that no Christians believe that Jesus was divine until the 4th century. Well, that's silly. Mm-hmm. Justin was making these arguments in great detail from the Old Testament, even as early as 150 A.D.
Yeah, it's fascinating how he came to the faith through the prefiguration that's found in the Old Testament.
Yes, yes, because at the time those were the Christian scriptures. They were already used in the liturgy. Justin himself says that the works of the prophets were read aloud in the Mass. In his day, as were the memoirs of the apostles, he calls the Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this precious, very primitive account of what happened at Mass in that period. And again, this is in a time long before there was a defined universal canon of the New Testament. So we see that these writings were already being used in the Mass.
Yeah, again, that canon, for so many of us, we understand that's what we call the Bible.
Yes, yes. But at the time, of course, there weren't books. There was no printing press. People tended not to bind these things all together. Very few people could own such a book or even a portion of such a book because it would have to be copied out laboriously, mm-hmm. painstakingly, and at great expense. So very few people could afford it, and very few people could read it anyway. So the way to receive the scriptures was just as Justin described when they were read in the liturgy.
I find his life fascinating, again, as a philosopher coming into that deepening relationship with God through that use of philosophy. I keep thinking of Peter Kreeft.
Oh, yes.
The great philosopher at Boston College.
Right, right, right. And so many philosophers down through the ages in the 20th century. There was Jacques Maritain, mm-hmm. his wife, Raissa. They studied philosophy, and they had this hunger for the absolute. Then their teacher, they brought their own teacher, Henri Bergson, along the way, too. So this is a path well-worn in 20 centuries that philosophy can lead us there. And Justin himself saw that. As a matter of fact, he had this great line, and we can translate it roughly as, whatever is good is ours, whatever mm-hmm. is true is ours. It's usually, you know, verbatim rendered as whatever things were rightly said among all men are the property of us Christians. And he tried to demonstrate that there were seeds of the word, that's his phrase, seeds mm-hmm. of the word, in the philosophers. And the great example of this, he said, was Socrates.
Mm-hmm.
Because Socrates deconstructed the religion of the Greeks, and he showed that the gods of the Greeks were absurd. And he was willing to be called an atheist, just as the ancient Christians were called an atheist. He was willing to die for that truth. So he saw Socrates as kind of a proto-Christian, and he believed that God was at work, you know, the God of Israel was at work, even in the pagan philosophers, and giving them these seeds of the word. They were anticipating the doctrine of Jesus Christ.
Help me if I'm phrasing this incorrectly, Mike, but isn't it, Justin really exemplifies that understanding that church would have, that we can come to know God even deeper in this ongoing revelation through reason.
Yes. The reason, as a matter of fact, is what led Justin to God. But Justin could not know God himself until he knew the God of Israel. Justin approached God through Platonic philosophy. And, the doctrine of Plato was able to take him to the threshold, but it was Jesus Christ who took him over the threshold, and Jesus Christ gave him a doctrine that he was willing to die for. And when he was accused, you know, Justin was eventually accused of being a Christian, and he was willing to die for that. He was tried. We actually have a transcript of his trial, and most historians believe that it's fairly accurate. And he's interrogated, and he's given ample opportunity to deny the faith, and he chooses not to. There's a great fictional treatment of the life of Justin in two novels that were recently published by Father Michael Geisler, who's a priest in Milwaukee, I believe he lives. He wrote a book called Junia, and it's put out by Scepter. Mm-hmm. And then he wrote a sequel called Marcus. Marcus is a disciple of Justin and the brother of Junia, and both of them die as martyrs. Both novels are very good. They're page-turners, and they really do give you a vivid experience of what it was like to live during that time and to follow Justin as he taught philosophy in Rome and to follow him all the way to death.
And through even his experience in trying to search out God through that his use of philosophy, it really was his reception of the gift of faith and the grace that he received through those sacramental experiences that really nurtured him and gave him the strength to embrace that martyr's death.
Absolutely, and I'm sure he would say that too. Justin's a valuable witness because he spoke so often of the Eucharist. It's there in all of his writings, and he even speaks of it in terms of Old Testament prophecy, especially applying the prophecy of Malachi. Very late in the Old Testament, when, it's a prophecy that we hear in the Third Eucharistic Prayer, from east to west, a perfect offering may be made to the glory of his name. And Justin applies that repeatedly to the sacrifice of the Eucharist. He said that this is that perfect offering that Malachi was talking about. And he says this many, many times. He keeps coming back to that prophecy. He's also a great witness to Marian doctrine. Justin spoke of Mary as the new Eve, and he said that she was obedient where Eve was disobedient. So he's even a witness to the early Christian doctrine of Mary's sinlessness.
And he did die in Rome.
He did. They were propelled the very early years, being pushed to Rome by the Holy Spirit. And so many of the early Christians they had to make pilgrimage there. You know, all the way up through Origen. And we see even that the heretics, if they wanted to make themselves known in the church, they went to Rome. That's where so many of the early heretics went to try to infiltrate the church and to pervert her doctrine. They didn't succeed, but they went to Rome, and that itself is testimony to the authority of Rome.
Quite a life and quite a feast day that we have today in honoring the memory and celebrating the life of St. Justin Martyr.
Absolutely. We can thank Leo XIII, Pope Leo XIII in the 19th century. He really did promote a reappropriation and a new appreciation of St. Justin Martyr. And I think he did this because he wanted us to look around and to look at the rising up of a new paganism, a new secularism, and to see how Justin approached the paganism and the secularism of his own day, the hostile forces, and to imitate him, to find what was good in the wider culture and praise it, but show how all of those things really do find their perfection in Christian doctrine. Whatever's good is ours. We have to remember these great, great principles from Justin.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking to Mike Aquilina, and he's the author of The Fathers of the Church, an introduction to the first Christian teachers. And that's what it is. It's an absolutely wonderful introduction to the lives of these teachers, and then we can go further. I found myself, after reading these, Mike, I end up going back to The Way of the Fathers, which is the companion book.
Oh, Yes, yes, yes. I've written four books on the fathers. I'm not a scholar, but I'm someone who got drawn into their world. I'm a journalist by trade. So what I want to do is to draw other people there too, in a popular and accessible way. I'm also blogging now on the Church Fathers, and I have a pretty active blog going at fathersofthechurch.com.
It's really quite a beautiful site. I mean, that aesthetically. I mean, your son has done a fantastic job.
Yep, he's my webmaster, my programmer. So he does good work for me. But we're getting a lot of traffic, and it's interesting to see that it's a place where a lot of different people can come together. The fathers, as we see in the life of St. Justin, he was a great seeker after wisdom, after truth. He wanted to know the truth. And the fathers are attractive in that way for many people, not only for Roman Catholics. I'm finding that more than half of the links into my blog and more than half of the email I get through the blog comes from non-Catholics. So the fathers really do give us a meeting place because of all of these things that we find in Justin. His eloquence, yes, but also his genuine charity toward others, and his genuine desire to see them come to the fullness of truth as they did. You know, he had gone down all the wrong roads,
mm-hmm.
and he had pursued them as far as he could, or as far as he could afford to anyway, and he found his way to Christ, and he was convinced that everyone else could, that the emperor could, that the Senate could, if only he had a chance to reach them. And boy, if we could imitate that zeal, it would be a wonderful thing.
And so, fans of St. Irenaeus, fear not, he'll be back.
He's coming back. So thanks again, Mike.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been a lot of fun. St. Justin's one of my favorites, and I hope a lot of other people discover him too.
Well, I think you could just hear in the tone of your voice and the pep and everything as you were talking about him that he is indeed one of your favorites. And Mike, you're one of our favorites too, so thank you for joining us and breaking open the life of St. Justin the Martyr for us today.
Thanks for having me.